Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to begin our program today by talking with you about a new cookbook that I'm pretty sure you will enjoy reading and looking at and using the recipes and reading all the wonderful things in it. It's called Heartland, the Cookbook, and the author is Judith Fertig. Judith's a food writer. She's an author. She's also authored The Prairie Home Cooking and Prairie Home Breads, as well as several books on barbecuing. She lives in Overland Park, Kansas, and she has created a wonderful book about cooking in the Midwest, cooking in our heartland, and I think you're going to enjoy it. It contains some stunning photography, some stunning food. Nearly every page, there are 150 recipes, something like that, covering a whole host of things, and we'll talk with her about those things, and we'll certainly ask for your input and your comments as well as we move along today. What recipes and ingredients do you think typify Midwesterners' relationship to food? Or do you have a small-scale producer that you like to buy from, and why? Well, those are some of the questions you might ask, and you'd have some others, too, at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also post, of course, on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And by the way, Judith has posted some recipes from the book as a note on the Facebook page. So I would encourage you to take a look at some of those recipes and like the page while you're there, too. Click on like. We'd love to have that. Judith Fertig with us by phone. Hi, Judith. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Well, it's great to be with you this morning, Larry.
You say that Heartland, the Cookbook, is a celebration of this region's cuisine and the agricultural bounty that inspires it. How has it inspired you?
Well, I've grown up in the Heartland. I grew up in Ohio. I've traveled all over, and I now live in the Kansas City area. And I'm always struck by, first of all, when you travel, how pretty it is here. I mean, we have a beautiful, very varied landscape, and you know, it's the agricultural heart of the United States. So when you travel, you always see something new happening. Whether it's, you know, right about now, the wheat in our part of the country is growing and it's green, and in a little bit it will be turning golden and ready for harvest at the end of June. If you go up into Iowa in the fall, you see the corn harvest. So there's always something going on, and always something that, you know, is food related.
And you know, it really is true that this is a really pretty part of the country. A listener had, I think, put a note on our Facebook page, or maybe she just emailed in, that she had been living in Colorado for many years in a beautiful area at the foot of the mountains and all that, but was returned to Wisconsin and was just stunned at the beauty of this state, and probably the Midwest.
It definitely. Whenever I go back to Ohio, you know, I'm always struck with that. You know, the 18th and 19th century towns, the rolling farmland, you know, the ever-changing landscape, the green and all the colors. And the same way with Wisconsin, you know, especially around the Madison and Milwaukee area. You know, there's so much beauty.
You know.
So I took a trip with my son. He was when he was looking for colleges. We went up to Milwaukee to look at a college, and we swung around to Madison, and then we went down into the south western area of Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's beautiful
area country, and oh, that was so gorgeous.
You make a point of saying in your book that the farm to table movement that's certainly growing in popularity in other parts of the country, kind of always been a part of how Midwesterners have related to their food.
Definitely. Even if farm-to-table meant going to a farm stand to get the first sweet corn of the season or to get really good tomatoes. You know, we've been all over that, you know, for a long time. And it's interesting that, you know, when people first settled our area, farm-to-table was, of course, really how they ate, and they grew their own food. And then we went through a period after World War II where the emphasis was on, you know, mass production of food. And so then the farm garden started to go away, and the family farm became like this agribusiness. And now we're getting back again to the notion of the family farm and to have things be sustainable and feed people rather than machines or animals.
You know, one of the things I really enjoy about your book, the photography is stunning. There's some wonderful food photography, but also photos that capture the feel of the Midwest.
It's interesting that the landscape photographer Jonathan Chester is actually a native of Australia, and he moved to the Kansas City area. And, you know, he had been on several treks to the Antarctic and has done a book on penguins and, you know, a trek to recreate the steps of this Antarctic explorer. But he had never been to Wisconsin.
Ah.
So it wasn't quite as cold as Antarctica, definitely, but he loved it. He absolutely loved it, and he was just so excited about this project. And I think this sense of discovery, you know, of somebody looking at our area with new eyes,
yes,
is sort of what all of us wanted.
Yeah, well, absolutely. The another thing that I really like about your book, and I'm enjoying reading it, it's full of remembrances, not only the food, but food purveyors. You've got some history and some funny stories.
Yeah, you know, Midwesterners, you know, we don't take ourselves too seriously. And, you know, we're not the first to jump on, you know, whatever latest trend is happening. We kind of have this wait-and-see attitude. And you know, we can poke fun at ourselves, and that's fine. So I think there is a vein of humor that goes through the book. And as a recovering English major, I had to throw in some other quotes that I thought were just wonderful, you know, that kind of deepen and enrich your experience. You know, we wanted to have sort of a layered experience that you could kind of lose yourself in the book, that it, you could, of course, cook with it. That's what it's for. But
sure.
But you could read it as a novel.
Yes, you can. You certainly can. Anna in Westby has a comment or a question. Let's go to Anna. Hi, Anna.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention, you know, the Westby Creamery, Westby, Wisconsin. You just can't get any better dairy. Friends from Indiana call us every year to send them a package for Christmas. And when my sister moved out of the state, she said she actually drove, this was back before the gas was so high, she drove about a half an hour to get the Westby, because the Westby sour cream from Quick Trip was still within her reach. So. If that's how good it is here, we got the best dairy.
That is wonderful. Well, thank you. I think it's always good to have that certain taste of home that you just absolutely have to have. You know, if it's a certain kind of cottage cheese that you love, or, you know, sour cream, or I know I grew up in Cincinnati. When I go back, you know, Cincinnati is really a great ice cream town. And you wouldn't think that, but they're really good with ice cream. And, of course, you know, you have to go back and have one of the local ice cream flavors. So I get that.
Where did your love of food and cooking and the Midwest, I suppose, because you grew up here, but where really did your love of food come from?
Well, my grandmother was a good cook. She's sort of a plain cook, and she wasn't adventurous, but what she made was really good. And my mother also started off as a good cook, and then she got very adventurous. She was, when Julia Child first had her program on PBS, which is, you know, this groundbreaking, you know, French food, my mother was all over that. And so I would come home from college, and, you know, you'd have, you know, terrible college food, you know, minute steak and hard peas and, you know, just dreadful stuff. And then I would come home, and my mother was making coq au vin and beef bourguignon, and it was fabulous. And so it really I really learned at an early age that, you know, with a few really wonderful ingredients, you can have something extraordinary on your table.
Absolutely. Well, we had an email from Mary, speaking of something on the table, who says, wonders if you'd ever tried planked carp. You get a huge carp and find a big oak plank and nail the carp to the plank, toss the whole thing into the hardwood coals, then wait till the carp seems to be done, retrieve the carp and plank from the fire, brush off the coals, throw away the carp, and eat the plank.
I think there's a similar recipe that calls for margaritas or something like that, that, you know, you drink the margaritas and throw everything else. But I love to plank. You know, I live in Kansas City area, and of course, you know, you learn how to barbecue when you're here. And planking, you know, a boneless fish fillet is really, really good. And there's in Milwaukee, there I looked at restaurant menus, especially restaurants that you know, had this farm-to-table connection, and I saw this great appetizer for planked prosciutto and planked cheese and planked sausages. And so I had planked fish before, and I'd planked chicken breasts and other things, but I actually tried this, and it's both of those recipes are in the book. One is a plank sausage that you bake kale until it turns like into potato chips. It's really good. And it was finished with the horseradish butter. And then the other recipe is it's just so simple. It's a baking plank, and you shingle, you know, preserved meat, sort of like you can do it with prosciutto, a capicola, that kind of thing, and then wedges of cheese, and you put it on your grill on the indirect or no heat side. You have a fire on the other side, and if you're like me, you can clean up your backyard and throw on some hardwood. I have pin oak trees in my yard, so I do, you know, I like to do things at once, and just put some pin oak branches on the coals, shut the lid of the grill, and you can plank, and it's a fabulous appetizer. It's like, you know, it's so easy. You know, you've done very little other than, you know, put the stuff on a plank, and it's just die for it.
Oh, it sounds, you know, you're making me hungry.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, you are, and by the way, if you'd like to join in, well, you have a question or comment for our guest today, I hope you'll join us as we talk about Heartland, the cookbook of the author Judith Fertig, as we visit with her. Give us a call with your comments or questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to the Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Take a look at some of the recipes we posted from Judith's book. And like the show, like the page. We'd like to have that as well. Judith, you're not, surprisingly not, you are a huge fan of farmers markets, and you feature in the book the Dane County Farmers Market as the largest in the country. What happens at farmers market that doesn't happen other places, even if you can buy locally grown and produced items at a grocery store?
Well, it's fun, first of all.
Yeah.
You go to a farmer's market, and it's lively. You go to a grocery store, and lively would not be the word I would use to describe it. There, you really see what is in season. Whereas if you go to the grocery store, you know, there are definitely some things that are in season, but you'll get grapes from Chile, and you can find, you know, produce from all over the world, asparagus from Mexico, and all this. But at the farmers market, you know, the good farmers markets, you only find what the farmers are growing right then and there. So there's that part of it, and then it's you get to meet the people who have grown what you're buying. So there's this immediate connection, a people connection, that you don't get at the grocery store. And I'm not against grocery stores, but I think, you know, the farmers market is just a unique experience, and it really roots us back to what is really local and fresh and fabulous.
And you know what else I like about it as compared to a grocery store? At the farmer's market, and we go to the Dane County Farmer's Market very often, you can stop at the morning bun place, buy one, and then eat it while you're going around and shopping.
Right.
You don't do that in the grocery store.
No. And if you brought a wagon to the grocery store, they kind of look at you a little funny. But wagons at the Dane County Farmers Market are definitely the thing. So haul your stuff around. I think Chef Tori Miller does that a lot. You know,
oh, yes.
He makes his rounds. He has a little wagon or two that, that you know, follows him so he doesn't have to, you know, carry all his purchases. So.
Yeah, he's there every Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Every Saturday morning. Oh, Judith Fertig, our guest today. If you'd like to join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Chris Molina, our on-air producer today. Judith Sears-Poisson, our engineer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting today about Midwestern foods with Judith Fertig, a food writer and author, and she has a new book out. It's called Heartland, the Cookbook, and it's a lot more than just a cookbook. I mean, it's a wonderful collection, not only of recipes, but of remembrances about food, of the people who produce our food. There's some funny stories in the book and some memories from many people who have been here a long time. And it all comes together with some wonderful photography to give us a great look at our Midwest cuisine. And I'm glad to have her with us today. Certainly, if you want to join in, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email talk@wpr.org. Tammy in Marshfield called in. She couldn't stay on line, Judith, but she wanted to know, what is Hunter's sauce?
Hunter's sauce. That is a very good question. I don't know.
Well, you know,
I would guess that it is something that is either gathered in the woods, you know, where a hunter is out, or is made from, you know, something in the wild. So, so I would guess that's what it is.
You know what? I'm going to ask what I have an opinion. I'm not going to say what I think. I'm going to ask people to call in and tell me what they think Hunter's sauce is, and other questions as well. So if you have a definition for Hunter's sauce, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Sandy wonders your opinion about the nutritional value and safety of genetically modified food and plant seeds.
Well, that's a whole, you know, big controversy, and I actually met a group of scientists who had developed these, and I think, you know, they have stacks and stacks of research that, you know, show that, you know, these are fine, whereas, you know, seeds that that have been you know, modified in another way through, you know, kind of horticultural manipulation, don't have quite as many studies to back them up. But I agree, you know, that the whole thing is a little scary to us, that, you know, genetically modified doesn't sound mm-hmm. good. I have talked to a farmer in New Orleans whose family has been farming for generations, and she's now growing genetically modified cotton. And I think in some cases, you know, we're not going to eat cotton, but in some cases, it is the better scenario, because she recalls sort of her grandfather going down the rows of cotton with a bag of arsenic and dusting arsenic over the cotton.
Oh.
To prevent boll weevil. And, you know, and of course there was no wildlife that would, you know, come around. And now that they've been using this genetically modified cotton, the wildlife has returned. You know, there are not as many chemicals that are used. And so in a way it's healthier. But I think it's a very complex issue. I think it bears a lot more
discussion.
Study.
Yeah, so. And study.
Yeah.
Joel in Madison up next. Joel, hi, thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hunter sauce is sauce chaussure, and it's a French sauce, and it's mushrooms and tarragon and tomatoes, onions, garlic. It's a classic reduction sauce.
Oh, okay.
With the addition of tarragon and mushrooms. So it's great with wild game, which is why it's called Hunter sauce. It's wonderful with venison. I rarely have a steak, a beef steak, where I don't make it, have it with it, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, so it would be ideally from mushrooms that you would gather in the wild, you know, that would go with whatever you were hunting. So that sounds delicious.
It does, doesn't it? Thanks, Joel. Thanks for calling. That's pretty basically what I had in mind for it as well. And this time of the year for us, the just about time for the morel mushrooms to start appearing, their lovely heads out of the woodlands around southern Wisconsin and southwest Wisconsin, primarily.
Yes, we get morels in our area, too, and people are very, very secretive about where they hunt for them because, you come back with morels and you know, saute those or do those in a cream sauce, and that is just fabulous. Real cream sauce, not what, you know, people think of as cream sauce. So.
All right. Well, Chris, I can remember my dentist, who's retired now, but telling me a story about getting a call from one of his clients and saying, an older lady, and saying, I have these mushrooms growing in my backyard and right in the city of Madison, and would you come over and look at them? And he went over and he said there were three shopping bags full of morel mushrooms on her back lawn.
Oh, my goodness.
And usually you think about going to the woods and all this, but...
Yeah, tromping through the woods and hoping for the best, and here she had them right in her backyard.
She probably had an elm at one point, elm tree or something at one point that died, and maybe that's that was the genesis. I don't know, but yeah. He was mighty happy.
Yeah, windfall.
Oh, Chris and Madison, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hello, how are you guys today?
Good, thanks for calling.
Yeah,
so I like talking and discussing about the food thing, and the question I have for the guests is, which Iron Chef would you have cooked for you for a day, and why? My answer is Doc Bobby Flay, just because he looks like an interesting cook, and his food looks damn tasty.
Well, let's see, appoint an Iron Chef. I don't think he's ever appeared on Iron Chef before, but I would vote for Thomas Keller of the French Laundry out in California, because it's so hard to get in there, and I think dinners start, if you get reservations a year ahead, at like $300 a head. So if he would come to my house and cook, I would be delighted.
And Chris, I'll give you, I agree with you on Bobby Flay, just because he would be a lot of fun to talk to. He sounds like a guy who would be a lot of fun to talk to. Although my 7-year-old daughter would say Cat Cora.
Oh, yeah, Cat Cora's great, yeah. And so is Bobby Flay, for that matter. But, you know, I think it's, I think Bobby Flay seems to be everywhere. So
yes.
So I think if you're going to have somebody come to your house, maybe somebody who is a little more reclusive, that doesn't go out as much.
Good point, Judith. Thanks, Chris. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, let's go to Betty and Frederick next. Hi, Betty.
Good morning.
Good morning, Betty.
To add a little bit about Hunter sauce.
Okay.
We lived in Italy for a number of years and traveled a lot, and there it would be cacciatore, which means hunter, and they would have had tomatoes and mushrooms and garlic. And in Germany, Jägerschnitzel, which is hunter's schnitzel, which would be cream and mushrooms on top.
Yeah, those hunters work up an appetite. So
yeah.
That sounds fabulous.
I think mushrooms are key to a hunter's sauce.
Oh, thank you, Betty.
Thank you.
Appreciate that call. And we have a question here relating, and I think it's kind of interesting because one of the parts of your book that I liked were the preserving, the different preserves and so forth that you talk about in your book. But we've always relied on preserving techniques in the Midwest because of our winters. And, you know, it really allows us to keep products for use during the winter time. And Frankly, I've always liked my own canned tomatoes versus what I might buy in the store. All of the store ones are fine, too. It's kind of nice to have our own. But you have some recipes in the book that use some of these approaches.
Right. And, you know, there are some canning recipes. There's, you know, a refrigerator pickle that you can also process in a water bath if you want to. But these are great to, you know, I also garden, and it's always the case that, especially with beans, that I love to do to grow yellow wax beans and the French fillet beans, the very thin ones. And, you know, for a while you have like three beans and it's not enough for a meal. And then all of a sudden you've got 3 pounds of beans before
yes.
you know it. And so it's always good to have, you know, a recipe that that you can put up very quickly. And these pickled beans, and you can do them just like you do baby cucumbers, are great. You know, we forget that kind of to set those out as appetizers. You know, they're fabulous.
They're good so good.
They're crunchy. They're, you know, they're colorful and, you know, much better than, you know, chips and dip or, you know, those veggie trays that people bring that, you know, that could be a lot more interesting if you just put a little more to it. So,
well, pickled, all those, they are, my mother-in-law makes them, and they, what a treat.
Yeah, it's very much a treat. And you know, it's, you know, does the job of an appetizer that it whets your appetite. It doesn't dull your appetite, but it whets it because mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's a little bit of sour, a little bit of crunch, and then, you know, it's a great appetizer.
You know, I'm wondering what your take on the different ethnic groups that emigrated to the Midwest and how they have influenced our cuisine. And I know one thing you attribute to immigrants is our affection for nibbling.
Right. You know, we have all those, you know, the Homestead Act really affected the Midwest, especially farther west. I think Wisconsin was pretty much settled, but I think especially around the Great Lakes area, you had a lot of people from Great Britain, like, you know, Cornwall and Wales and a lot of people and Germans, of course. Everybody had Germans come. So, but the Germans especially like to snack. And, you know, it's hard to believe that, but in Kansas, we had all these beer gardens. You don't think of Kansas in beer gardens, but, of course, all that ended with Prohibition. But, you know, enjoying a good beer goes right along with snacking. And I know Wisconsin's known for, brewing great beers. When I grew up in Cincinnati, we had like 5 local beers that, you know, some of them disappeared over the years. But, you know, all that's making a comeback. And distilling, craft distilling is really making a comeback, too. I was just blown away by how good Rehorsed vodka and gin distilled in Milwaukee are. I mean, you think, you know, vodka and you think, oh, ho-hum, and their vodka is fabulous. So all that, you know, making a signature cocktail and having kind of a signature nibble can be very simple and yet can be very, very good and true to your Midwestern roots.
What influences do you see from the original native inhabitants?
Well, there's still the gathering from the wild, and that is also making a comeback. You know, for a while, when, you know, the first settlers got here, you know, they had to gather from the wild sometimes, and then that became kind of a sign that you were poor and that you couldn't, you know, you weren't wealthy enough or affluent enough to, you know, grow your own food or buy your own food. But now we've come back to the idea of gathering from the wild as, you know, you can't get much more local than that. I mean, a plant that grows without any assistance whatsoever out in the wild is local, local, local. So I think, you know, hickory nuts would be a great example. And they're something you can gather from the wild, but they're a little more difficult to get out of the shell. So, you know, you're not going to find them at the grocery store very much. You know, they're something that you gather and that you sit around while you're watching TV or sit around in front of the fire and then pick out the nut meats, and then you've got hickory nuts to do all these wonderful things with.
I agree. I definitely agree with you on that, Judith. Judith Freitag, our guest today, she is the author of the book we're talking about, Heartland, the cookbook. If you'd like to join in with your own questions or comments, reach us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And Roxanne in Green Bay wondered if morels only grow in elm forests and have they started popping up yet? And you were more likely to find them, at least at one point, in forests that had elms, dead elms, or dying elms. But I think you can find them I know you can find them in other places as well because we have so few elm trees left, Judith.
Yes. I think it's, they're definitely around trees and where the soil is, I think, a little sandy and sort of rich with humus. So I think, you just have to look for that rich leaf cover and look around the base of trees and good luck. I've never been able to find them myself, but I certainly enjoy them when I find them already gathered.
Well, I've gathered, but I'm not very good at it. But if you go out with somebody who's really good at it, I went out with somebody who'd been doing it for years the first time I went out, and he walked behind me in the woods. And I would walk along, and I'm looking, and he'd say, Larry, and I turn around. Oh, you walked right by, they were just barely peeking out between the leaves and you couldn't see them. Well, you need a trained eye. You need a good eye. But that's another nice thing about the farmers markets and the Dane County farmers market, for example. I'm sure it's true. I know it's true of other farmers markets in the state. When the morels are in season, you can almost always buy them at a farmers market.
Yeah, that's a great place to find morels, and then that they're not domestically raised, because sometimes you get those and those don't they don't have that deep morel flavor like the ones gathered from the wild. So it's like morels, like everything else, you have to be careful.
That's right. Well, Margaret and Merrill has a question or comment. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Well, I've had your book for a while, and I love it.
Oh, thank you.
And I've got a recipe here I want to try. It's called Wild Rice Popovers in your bread book.
Oh, right. That's a really savory recipe, and it makes it, again, that's great cocktail fare. That's from Prairie Home Breads, I believe. And it is, it's wonderful with a glass of wine. It also makes a great topping, if you just want to, kind of spoon it over, like a chicken casserole of some kind, that's also good. But yeah, it's very savory. It's got, ground white pepper in it and cooked wild rice. So
my question is, what is Magi seasoning? I don't have that.
Oh, it comes from our German roots, and it's a little bottled seasoning. I think it's pronounced Magi, but I could be wrong. So
okay.
Maggi. And it's actually a German condiment that you will find. We can get it in Kansas City pretty easily. You can find it near the Worcestershire sauce.
Yes.
Oh,
and
is it common? Is it
yes.
Mm-hmm. Easy to find?
Yeah, yeah. We certainly have it in the Madison area stores. I've seen it.
And it is, when I was on book tour for Prairie Home Cooking, I was in Michigan, and I made a recipe that had Maggi seasoning in it. And you do use it like Worcestershire, and if you can't find Maggi, you can use Worcestershire. It won't be quite as strong, but it's still good. Mm-hmm. And I was asking her it was a German lady, and she says, do you know what that's made of? And basically it's made from lovage, which is an herb that kind of has a combined flavor of celery, garlic, and onion, and they distill that, and it's got this great, you know, great flavor.
Yeah, it's a wonderful flavor.
Well, I will look for it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret.
You. Yeah, bye.
And let's turn to Sally in Plover next. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I had just a question to verify about the Iron Chef of your choice. You mentioned Keller.
Yes.
And, so you want the full name?
Yes, yeah, the full name of that, the one that you chose.
Well, I chose Thomas Keller of the French Laundry, and I believe it's in Napa. It's in the wine country in California.
Oh, okay, and his name is Thomas Keller?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, I'm trying to think what he looks like. He's got a show of his own, or...
No, he doesn't. That's why I chose him. Because he really hasn't been on Iron Chef. He's reclusive. So instead of having somebody that's already been on TV, I'd rather have somebody who is harder to get.
One other quick question I had was about making rye bread. I don't know if you know anybody that does that much or you do that. Do you? We're working with rye flour. Do you know how much it takes to rise that, how long it takes for the rising time?
Well, with rye flour doesn't have very much gluten in it, so you usually use rye flour in combination with wheat flour. And rye flour, you know, people think rye bread tastes like rye flour. Well, it doesn't. Rye flour gives the, you know, body to it and gives texture to it, but really the flavor comes from usually caraway seed. And something that's sour, if you think of sour rye or you think of rye bread, you're probably thinking of the flavor of caraway seeds. So usually rye is mixed with bread flour or wheat flour of some kind, and then sometimes something added to give it the deep, dark color because rye meal is and rye flour is basically kind of a pale brown. And then caraway seed and salt and you know, maybe a little yogurt to make it sour, and then you've got a great sour rye bread.
Oh, that sounds good too, Judith.
Yeah.
All this sounds good today. It's been a real pleasure talking with you today, and I'm really enjoying reading your book. I like a cookbook that you can also read as sort of like a novel, and this certainly fills the bill.
Yeah, well, thank you, Larry. I'm so pleased to be back on public radio.
Well, it's great to have you, and I hope we can visit again.
I hope so, too. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you so much. Judith Fertig is a food writer and author of several books. She wrote Prairie Home Cooking and Prairie Home Breads, as well as several books on barbecuing. She lives in Overland Park, Kansas. And the book that we were sort of discussing today, a new book, it's called Heartland, the Cookbook. And you will enjoy, I'm pretty sure, reading all about the Heartland and Heartland cooking in the Midwest. Great to have her with us today. Well, coming up, we're going to take a look at another book that's out about our changing planet. It's called Changing Planet, Changing Health, How the Climate Crisis Threatens Our Health and What We Can Do About It. Dan Ferber, our guest, coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.